Operator. Operator, will you please give me the correct time?
Certainly, sir. It's Joan Davis time.
Sure, it's Joan Davis time.
Well, there's no question about it. From coast to coast, it's Joan Davis time.
Joan Davis time.
Time you spend with Joan Davis tonight, you'll hear the voice of her special guest, one of radio's most selective, introspective, and effective detectives, Sam Spade, plus a great supporting cast featuring Lionel Stander, Mary Jane Croft, Bob Jellison, the music of John Rarick's orchestra, the Coral Air Singing Quintet, and yours sincerely, Ben Gage. To start proceedings merrily, the Coral Air sing Jubilee.
Jubilee, come and join the Jubilee, gather on the run. Have a lot of fun singing in the sun. Jubilee, come and join the Jubilee. Listen to the band swinging in the land. Everybody stand and sing with a zip and zing. Watch the blues go bing. Make the rafters ring up to heaven. Jubilee, carnival of joy. Mr. Bloom won't be about. Music always knocks him out. Learn a song that you can shout. Enjoy the Jubilee.
Now it's time to meet the star of our show, America's Queen of Comedy, Joan Davis.
Thank you, thank you. And hi, everybody.
Hiya, Joanie. Well, friends, despite her seeming enthusiasm, Joan Davis is somewhat depressed today.
Yeah, I'm depressed today. And tomorrow, too.
Yes, she is depressed and despondent because there's no romance in her life.
There's no romance in my life. There's no life in my romance either.
In fact, Joanie was so worried about this that last week she wrote to Dorothy Dix and said she was interested in getting married. Joan also included a picture of herself, didn't you, Joanie?
Yeah, and you know what happened? Dorothy Dix returned my picture, and on the back of it she wrote, "Please be more specific. Do you want a husband or wife?" Gee, you know, I just can't figure out why men never propose to me. They say that in order to get married, a woman has to have beauty, wealth, and looks. Well, I have a brain, and it's the little things that count. Well, anyway, today, shortly after I entered the tea room, my manager, Lionel, said...
What's the matter, boss? You look worried.
I am worried.
I bet I know what's bothering you. Fellas.
Well, that's part of it, Lionel.
I don't know what you're complaining about. Didn't you have a date last week and go to the movies with that Herbie Krausmeier?
Sure, and I thought he was going to get romantic, too. Before we went to the movie, he put his head on my shoulder and whispered in my ear.
What did he say?
He said, "I'll wrestle you for the price of the tickets." Embarrassing.
Embarrassing?
Yeah, I beat him 2 straight falls. And that's the way it is, Lionel. I go out with fellas, but, well, they never seem to really get interested in me.
Boss, the trouble with you is that you don't make yourself glamorous.
Glamorous?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what glamour is. What a funny one.
Listen, I'll tell you that. Glamour is an air of mystery, of untold experiences. To be glamorous, a woman must be mysterious. You gotta look like you've lived.
Well, I've lived.
I mean recently. In order to be glamorous, a girl has to act, dress, and look different. Now, if you was to dress alluringly and hint at things in your past, why, men would throw themselves at your feet.
Well, that'd be dangerous.
Dangerous?
Sure, with my bow legs, they'd go right on through.
Oh, now, hold it. Wait a minute, boss. You ain't so bow-legged.
Are you kidding? In a bathing suit, I look like an unfinished Quonset hut.
Listen, that's just it. If you was to dress in a long, slinky black dress, you'd conceal all that. And to add glamour, you'd wear a black veil and some fragrant perfume. And walk around with a faraway look in your eyes, as if you were thinking of Paris.
Couldn't I think of Chicago? The fellow I know there owes me $10.
No, no, Look, Joni, take my advice. Just get yourself one of those slinky black outfits and try it on your next date.
Well, gee, that's tonight. Freddie Hartsfeller is coming over, and I don't
Listen, you still got time to go over to Heyman's department store and buy this stuff.
But honest, Lionel, I wasn't cut out to be a mystery woman.
Sure you were. Anybody can be mysterious and have glamour. Come on, try it just once. Like if I was your date.
Well, okay. Frederick. I love you madly. Won't you come with me to the Casbah?
Come with you to the Casbah? That's Charles Boyer.
That's all right. He can come, too. Well, I'm off to Clamor for some glamour. Excuse me, miss. I'd like to see something in a long black dress.
Certainly. Is it for you?
Certainly it's for me. What style would look good on a girl about 25?
Oh, I thought you wanted it for yourself.
Well, I do. Now, what can you show me that'll make me mysterious?
Well, we have this little number here. It's strapless, backless, midless, and sideless.
I want to be mysterious, not run out of town.
If you're looking to catch yourself a man and get married, this is it, honey.
But that's so long. I don't like my dresses dragging on the floor.
Well, this doesn't drag on the floor. It's only 4 inches below the knee.
With me, that's the floor. But I'll take it. Okay, now, what kind of perfume do you have?
Oh, we got all kinds of perfume. Wood, Hold Me in the Moonlight, Surrender, My Sin.
Now, what have you got for a beginner?
Well, here's one called Thrill Me. My sister wore it out on a date.
Did it work?
It must have. That was a month ago, and she ain't back yet.
Well, I'll take some of that.
How much?
About 2 weeks' worth. So, and now I think I'll need some false eyelashes and fingernails.
Okay, honey. Now, will there be anything else?
Well, how about a black veil?
Think you need a black veil? It's been pretty foggy lately.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, let me see your face. You know, I think you're right. The fog ain't thick enough.
Oh, fine. Now let's see. Have I got everything?
Well, let's see. You've got pads for your hips, pads for your shoulders, false hair, false eyelashes, false fingernails. That ought to get you a husband.
Yeah, I can just hear the minister at the wedding. I now pronounce you man and stuff.
Boss, you look terrific, sensational. The black dress, the veil, them false eyelashes.
See, Lionel, I hope this works when Freddie Hartsfield gets here.
Oh, sure it'll work, boss. But remember, you gotta make Freddie think you're a woman who's lived. Wear a mysterious French look on your face. You know, get your eyes half closed and let your lower lip sag like Chevalier.
Let my lower lip sag? How's this?
A little more.
No, no, no.
Just a little more.
Mm.
A little teensy weensy bit more.
If it sags anymore, I'll have a red scarf to go with my outfit.
Hey, that must be Freddie.
Yeah, you'd better go back in the kitchen, Lionel.
Okay. Good luck, boss.
Hello, Frederick.
Hiya, Joni. Hey, what's the idea of the veil? Are you Mrs. Hush?
No. Do you like me this way?
Gee, I can't see your face. Yeah, I like you that way.
I'm glad. Terribly, utterly glad.
Oh, well, let's get started for the movies, Joni. There's a swell picture at the Bijou.
No, wait. Freddie, I simply must talk to you.
Okay.
Freddie, come closer. Now tell me.
Yeah?
Would you come with me to the Casbah?
What's playing there?
Freddie, there are certain... certain things that, well, I've kept them from you.
What things?
Look into these eyes, Freddie. Tell me, don't you see trouble?
I'll say you got your false eyelashes on upside down.
No, you think of me as Joan Davis, the sweet, innocent girl that runs a tea room. But I'm not. Freddie, I'm a member of an international spy ring. I have no name. I'm known as number 6,999.
6,999?
Yes, but you can call me six.
Oh, come on, Johnny. You ain't no spy. How can you get mixed up on international thieves and gangsters? You don't have the family background for it.
Well, why not? My father was a used car salesman. Oh, how well I can remember my first job as a spy. Stealing plans and then running away through the countryside of southern France in a long limousine.
I don't believe it.
Well, maybe it was northern France in a short limousine.
I don't believe it.
New York in a cab with a midget?
Still don't believe it.
All right, so it was Glendale with Honest John demonstrating a used motorcycle.
Like I thought. You've been feeding me a lot of baloney.
Please, can't you see the past is very painful to me? I know you want to marry me and try to make me respectable again, but, well, I won't let you waste your life. Go, Freddie. Now, leave while there is still time. What do you like that? He went.
Hey, look. What happened?
Well, it didn't work, Lionel. I lost Freddie. He's gone.
Oh, gee, boss, I'm sorry. I never thought my suggestion would work out that way.
Oh, what's the difference, Lionel? Things never seem to work out right for me anyway. And as far as Freddie's concerned, you know what they say. 'Tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all.
Who says that?
The Reno Chamber of Commerce.
Tony Glamour Cotton is a failure, we're afraid. It doesn't seem she's meant to be an alluring, mysterious maid. But mystery still will beckon. There'll be lots of fun, we reckon, when our Joni gets involved with that super sleuth, Sam Spade. But in the meantime, lend an ear to this. Each morning, a missionary advertised with me on time. He tells the native population that civilization is fine.
Country educated savages holler from a bamboo tree.
That civilization is the thing for me to see. But bongo, 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 I don't want to leave the bongo. No, 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 no. Bungle, I'm so happy in the jungle, I refuse to go. Don't want no bright lights, false feet, doorbells, landlord, I make it clear that no matter how you coax me, I'll stay right here.
They have things like the atom bomb,
so I think I'll stay where I am. Civilization, I'll stay right here.
Friends, so far, Joan Davis's attempts to become glamorous have proven futile. Tonight, despite her newly acquired slinky black gown, her exotic silken veil, and her mysterious perfume, she sits at home alone. Instead of an ardent admirer listening to her precious words, Joni is listening to the closing words of her favorite radio detective, Sam Spade.
And that, Effie, winds up the strange case of the murdered millionaire.
Gosh, I never thought his wife had done it, Sam. She seemed so sweet.
Yeah, she was sweet, all right, Effie, and so was the poison she put in his coffee.
Well, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
And so concludes another chapter in the adventures of Sam Spade, brought to you every week at this time by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Listen in again next Sunday when...
Gosh, I sure love that Sam Spade program. There's always some glamorous woman with a problem who comes to him for help. See... Wish my life was exciting like that. I wonder what it would be like if I was one of those mysterious women. Maybe my husband was just murdered and I go to Sam Spade for help. And he falls in love with my beauty.
Oh, that kind of tires.
Gee, can you imagine me being a glamorous woman married to some rich old millionaire? Maybe even an English duke with a classy Reginald-type name.
Oh, it's so sleepy. Oh, so glamorous, too. I am. So sleepy. Reginald. Oh, Reginald.
Reginald, my dear, I say, Reginald, you're not even listening to me.
I'm frankly sorry, Joan. Forgive me. I say you're not sorry you married me, are you, old heifer?
Why, Reginald, what makes you say that?
Oh, I know. You seem to be cooling off towards me lately.
Cooling off?
Yes, I felt it yesterday when you tried to knife me.
Oh, how utterly silly. There's bound to be a tip in any marriage.
True. But somehow we don't seem to be so happy as when we were first married. Yet that seems like ages and ages ago. How long has it been?
2 days. Oh, well, I may as well admit it, Reddy. I am disappointed in your lying to me.
Lying to you?
Yes, when I married you, you told me you were worth $49 million. And what do I find out now? You're only worth 48.
Darling, I'll be worth more soon. After all, remember my position. I'm second in line for my father's estate.
Who's ahead of you?
My father.
Oh, Shadow. It's no use, Reginald. I want to be free. You hear, free.
I'll never give you up, Joan, never. Oh, wait, here comes the butler with my nightly bowl of chili and beans.
Here you are, sir.
Thank you, Gay.
Oh, you and your chili and beans. I want a divorce.
Oh, come, come, Joan. Forget the divorce and have some chili and beans.
I'd rather have a divorce. You can have custody of the chili and beans.
This is delicious. I just adore chili and beans.
Well, what do you know? The old boy's fainted.
Fainted? Nothing. He's dead. See? Rigor mortis is setting in.
How do you know?
He's more lively than usual. And anyway, we'll both say it was heart failure.
Whatever you say, gorgeous, but the police may suspect poison.
In that case, I'll need help. I know. I'll go see the famous private eye, Sam Spade. He'll help me because I'm glamorous and gorgeous and mysterious.
I'm a private eye. My name is Sam Spade. Thank you. Anyhow, I'm Sam Spade, license number 137596. Today, the day started off pretty badly for me. First, I was rudely awakened out of a deep sleep by my alarm clock ringing. I jumped out of bed, took a quick shower, and walked to the elevator. Then I turned around and walked back into my room. I'd forgotten the dress. After I dressed, I went to my office. When I got there, I found 3 corpses on the floor, probably clients who had been killed after being followed to my office. Luckily, it was a Tuesday, so I put them outside for the trash collector. Then I took a big slug of straight rye. I hate rye, but what could I do? There wasn't any white bread. I was just taking some butter for a chaser when my secretary, Effie, a doll, announced a client. The door opened, and there, standing framed in the doorway, was the stuff that dreams are made of. I knew it was time to put away the tin soldiers. This was for keeps. A chorus of 500 angels singing a Cole Porter torch song rang in my ears when she spoke.
Is this the office of Sam Spade, private eye?
Your name is Joan Davis. You live at 6999 Kensington Road. Your husband just died, and you want me to find you an alibi before the police get there and call it murder.
How did you know?
Well, in this business, you have to take a wild guess now and then.
You're pretty clever.
Yes, and you're beautiful. Kiss me, baby.
Why not?
What a kiss she gave me. When I released her from my embrace, I was wearing her false eyelashes, and she wore my vest with my badge pinned to it. We returned each other's property. And then I started questioning her. Tell me, baby, did you notice anybody following you to my office?
Well, I did notice a man wearing a green velvet cape, a top hat, and a red cane. He had a long black beard, checkered knickers, and carried a bowling ball under each arm.
Just another guy in a crowd, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't have even noticed him if he hadn't had a box of eggs sticking out of his pocket.
I see. How did you happen to come to me?
Good housekeeping recommended you.
Well, let's get down to the case. I'll need some facts, not many, just enough to confuse me. First thing we have to prove is that you didn't have a motive. Now tell me, did your husband have any enemies?
Just me.
Anybody hate him enough to want to see him dead?
Just me.
Are there many people who might profit from his death?
Just me.
Good. At least there's no motive.
Just me. But it's so nice of you to say so, Sammy boy.
The way she said, Sammy boy, sort of poured out like honey. I was about to take her in my arms again when I realized it might be safer to visit the scene of the crime. I helped her into her huge mink coat that was made from at least 70 perfect minks, all of them alive. We took a cab over to her place. She was wearing a perfume so dangerous it could only be refilled with a doctor's prescription. And as an added precaution, after it was refilled, both the prescription and the doctor had to be destroyed. Her front door was opened by a sinister-looking butler who drew her to him and kissed her warmly on her lips. Then as the butler took my coat, he pressed the cold blade of a knife against my throat and said,
"Will you have tea or coffee with your lunch?"
My trained detective instinct told me that this boy would bear watching. I spoke to him in my usual cold and personal private eye type manner. If you don't mind, I'd like to see the body.
Yes, sir. Whom shall I tell it is calling?
Never mind. Has anybody been here yet?
Yes, a policeman.
The heat. What did he want?
He was selling tickets to the policeman's ball.
But, Gage, what did he do when he noticed my husband's body lying on the floor?
He sold him two tickets.
He took me out to the patio where her husband lay dead. On the table was an unfinished bowl of chili and beans. You could tell her husband had loved chili and beans because his body had a disappointed look on its face. I decided it was time to stop playing. I'd already seen what I had to know. I looked at her and I let her have it without pulling any punches. All right, baby, why'd you kill him?
But how did you know? I mean, that is, I
found this letter from the insurance company in the hall. It's dated last week and addressed to you. Read it.
Dear madam, in answer to your letter, we would like to inform you that your husband carried $84 million in life insurance payable to you as the beneficiary at the rate of $15 a week for 9,000 years.
Well, baby, there's no use kidding me any longer. At last, I found the motive.
Look, honey, Sammy boy, $84 million is a lot of dough. Forget the law. Think of me and you on the beach at Waikiki. Moonlight, tropical water. We could live, Sammy boy. The moon is low and big, Sammy boy. You feel like you can reach out and touch it, Sammy boy. Oh, you and me, Sammy boy. Sit upon my knee, Sammy boy. Oh, you and me and $84 million. And all you have to do is destroy that letter and not turn me in.
Her deep gray eyes were like flashing stars. Her red lips looked soft and appealing. I was about to say yes, but then I knew I couldn't. I was a private eye, and I had an obligation. If I let her off, I'd never again be able to look another private eye in his private eye. I clenched my jaw, not very hard. It's very tender on account of I have to clench it so often in my line of work. And I said, "No soap, sister."
You mean...
Yeah. I'm turning you in.
But they'll give me the chair. They'll... Wait a minute. What am I getting excited about? What if you do have the motive? You can't prove I killed my husband. Why, you can't even prove how he was killed.
Suddenly, I realized she was right. I didn't know how her husband was killed, nor could I prove that she did it. But then I noticed something jump from the pocket of her mink coat. I picked it up. Then I looked at her husband's body again. I exposed his midriff. There were strange welts on it, welts that hadn't bruised the flesh on the outside at all. And suddenly it came to me. I knew the whole story. I spun around to her. Okay, sister, I know how you did it.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
You know that your husband loved chili and beans, that he ate it every night.
What about it?
I found the evidence that'll send you to the chair, baby. It came out of your coat, and here it is, a Mexican jumping bean.
So what does that prove?
It proves that you substituted for the regular kidney beans in his chili some Mexican jumping beans, and he was kicked to death from the inside.
I did it. But please, please, don't let me go to the chair. Please, please. I don't want to die.
He don't want to die. Die.
Ah! Ah! Push. What's the matter? What are you screaming about? What's the matter?
Well, gee, Lionel, I must have had a nightmare.
Yeah. I figured you might feel bad about your glamour campaign falling through, so I dropped by to ask you to go to a movie. Suddenly I heard you screeching.
Yeah, and what a terrible dream I had. Why, do you know, I actually dreamed you were married to me, and I killed you.
Thanks, boss. That was the merciful thing to do.
Oh, Lionel. Gosh, even in dreams I can't be glamorous. I don't know, my life these days seems to be an empty shell. I just keep laughing on the outside and crying on the inside.
Yeah, I'll cut it out, boys.
What's so funny? You can drown that way.
Joni will be back in a minute, and while she's gone, here's something well worth remembering. You hear democracy talked about a lot these days, so much that we almost forget the true meaning of the word. We know that democracy means government by the people, but what is sometimes forgotten is that all of you are the people. And America will continue to be America only if each of us rededicates himself to the meaning and practices of democracy, taking an active interest in the affairs of our community, voting regularly and thoughtfully. In short, we must recognize our responsibilities as citizens of a free nation and discharge those responsibilities to the best of our ability. Democracy is being judged in the world of today on the basis of how well we make freedom work in America. Other people in other lands will decide whether they want freedom for themselves by seeing how effectively it lives and functions in the everyday life of this country. And what they decide will affect you and your family and every man, woman, and child in America. Freedom is everybody's job in this free nation. Make sure that you make freedom your job. And now here's Joni again.
Well, I guess most of our listeners know that the radio detective Sam Spade is played by a mighty fine actor whose real name is Howard Duff. So now I'd like to thank Howard for his swell job tonight. Thanks, Howard.
Well, thank you, Joni. Being with you is more fun than a barrel of corpses.
You know, I just love that detective stuff. I had a boyfriend once who was a private eye. But he specialized in tricky disguises.
Disguises?
Yeah. One day he was standing on a street corner disguised as a mailbox.
Disguised as a mailbox? Mm-hmm. Well, what happened?
Well, he looked so real that before he knew it, a lady shoved a package down his throat and slammed his lower lip. Oh, well, enough of my lip. Good night, Sammy boy.
Good night, sweetheart.
Sweetheart? Oh, boy, goodbye now.
Joan Davis Time is produced and directed by Dick Mack and is written by Larry Marks and Arthur Stander. Howard Duff may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Naked City. This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week. The Columbia Broadcasting System.